Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Don and Dude.
Spooky. It's the Album Nerds Podcast. I'm Dude. I got Don with me. He may have wet himself just now, but hopefully he's okay. How you doing, Don?
What's your favorite scary movie?
Okay. What is that, the emphysema monster?
Wow, I can't whisper.
Don has been under the weather, so if anything sounds funnier than usual, that's why. All right, so we are the Album Nerds. This is the Album Nerds Podcast. We love albums and the album format and finding all kinds of dumb ways to talk about them. It is Halloween season, and we've found a way to get up into some spooky music, kind of, depending on your perspective on life in general. But we do have a great show for you today, so we'll each be presenting an album from a band that wears costumes or makeup as a part of their musical presence. We're calling that What Are You Supposed to Be? You know, like Halloween when you trick-or-treat, the lady at the door asks you what you are. Don's, of course, going to ask us a deep question, hopefully not too scary.
Scary, very scary.
And then we will have some shout-outs to some other albums and album-related items that we're digging. And then we will spin the wheel of musical discovery to learn what we'll be talking about next time. But this week, it's all about Halloween.
This is Halloween. This is Halloween.
That's what I'm talking about!
Some musicians hide behind masks, makeup, or elaborate costumes, not to disguise themselves, but to amplify their art. These visual personas blur the line between performance and identity, turning albums into complete sensory experiences. As we celebrate Halloween, we will discuss albums from artists who dress up.
I'm going to be having fun with sound effects today, Don. Sorry. There were not as many to consider as I thought, and many things we've talked about before, so that kind of limited us to some degree. David Bowie, of course, costumed spaceman in The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and that era of his career. Kiss, we've talked about recently. Of course, Ace Frehley just passed away, so rest in peace, Ace. Would have been great to talk about, but Creatures of the Night probably would have been my choice. Alice Cooper, well-known. Mostly, I think the stage show is more spooky than the music itself. Yeah. Slipknot. We talked about Slipknot last year. Probably would have gone for either for Iowa or the self-titled from 99. What about Gwar, Don? You a fan of the Scum Dogs of the Universe?
I've only heard like individual songs here and there, you know, back when in high school, somebody would play something for me that was kind of funny or whatever, but I never paid much attention to them.
It's all about those big rubber costumes.
Yeah.
It's not for me. Daft Punk, a couple of French dudes that wear helmets, basically just play pop music, but stand behind a couple of laptops, look like DJs. I hope I didn't offend anyone, but that's just what it seems like to me. And Devo. They didn't have like false identities or anything. They weren't like Johnny Devo and Frankie Devo or anything, but they wore the flower pot hats and Fallout outfits and stuff, right?
Yeah. Don't forget Chris Gaines.
Ah, yes, Chris Gaines.
One of these days we got to do that album. I'm just curious about it.
Yeah. We should find a way. That was a pop album performed by Garth Brooks, but he took on the guise of a man named Chris Gaines, and they wrote a whole biography and stuff for him. They're going to make a movie out of it, but that one is hard to find. I did find an out of print copy on CD. I don't think it's on the streamers either. All right, so enough about the people that we're not going to be focusing on. The picks are in. Prepare for a very, very scary experience. Let's get to our choices.
Choose me?
My pick comes from July 1973. It's the debut self-titled album from the New York Dolls, who famously, you know, dressed up in kind of glammed up, you know, women's outfits, high heels and makeup and all sorts of stuff like that. You know, androgynous fashion, kind of camp theatrics.
I have one thing to say. You better work.
RuPaul took the drag on stage to the appropriate place.
Sure. So the New York Dolls were David Johansen on vocals and harmonica, Johnny Thunders on lead guitar, Sylvain Sylvain on rhythm guitar, Arthur Killer Kane on bass, and Jerry Nolan on drums. Kind of a proto-punk sound, mm-hmm. very glam. This album was produced by Todd Rundgren. But let's hear the opening cut, Personality Crisis.
It just, it doesn't sound very glammy to me. It sounds more like traditional bluesy rock.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. Because I think a lot of that glam scene was coming out of Britain.
Right.
But these guys were in New York. So maybe it had more of like a American New York vibe or
right.
something.
Yeah, I'm not that makes sure. sense.
But yeah, I mean, a lot of it sounds like the Stones to me.
Yes.
Yeah. So Personality Crisis was written by David Johansen and Johnny Thunders. Kind of has a Chuck Berry style to it.
Indeed.
Yep. I do think Johnny Thunders' guitar ends up being pretty influential in the the glam rock scene and in the punk world. But yeah, so the lyrics are about, you know, sort of being absurd and social posturing.
Well, I would think on the surface, bunch of dudes in drag, personality crisis, you would think that was probably about, you know, whether, you know, the transgender mm-hmm. or cross-dressing. People used to get that stuff a lot more confused back then as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would jump to, is that that's what this is about.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think it really is. I think they knew that when they titled it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a pretty aggressive song, I guess. Although I think the piano part kind of tones it down a little bit or makes it seem a bit more campy.
I think it's the piano and harmonica that make it less glammy to me. At least, you know, your British glam like you were talking about. I mean, I like it quite a bit. I love Johansson's growly lyrics and delivery. I mean, it is Mick Jaggery, but it is New York City guttery at the same time.
Even, I mean, he has the New York accent, you know, which is so funny because, I mean, this guy in a wig that's dressed like a woman sounding like he does is just, you know, really, it's a weird impact.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the New York City scene just around this time, other bands like Kiss were forming and they took that drag thing, the makeup, to the next level. They do the platform boots like New York Dolls, but they took it to a more fantastical place with creature makeup instead of directly lady. Although I guess it's at first they it was more like New York Dolls. At first they were trying like women's makeup and stuff. So
yeah, I definitely hear a lot of, well, either the New York, I guess probably I hear the New York Dolls and Kiss a lot. Even like
I do too.
The opening riff of this song, the dun 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 dun, kind of sounds like Rock and Roll All Night.
Yep. Something very New York City was going on here.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's hear another cut. Here is Frankenstein.
It's pronounced Frankenstein.
There's the punk.
Yes.
Yeah, it is funny, you know, the way that this kind of leaps between those worlds.
Yep. The guitar is so aggressive there. That's that's Johnny Thunders. Sort of. I mean, you can definitely hear the Hendrix in it. I don't know. Maybe it's a little more refined than Hendrix stuff.
I think it's more punky than Hendrix stuff. It's like that hammering, you know, with your fingers kind of round, you know.
Yeah, so Frankenstein was written by Sylvain Sylvain and David Johansen. I mean, I'm not totally sure exactly what the metaphor is. You know, is Frankenstein sort of about New York City and misunderstood outsiders? It's also maybe a reference to Edgar Winner's Frankenstein song as well.
It's possible.
But I've always just liked the way the song builds up. Like towards the end, just the guitars get louder. Johansson's voice gets louder, you know, and the way he's like, you gotta get it. You know, it's just so, so over the top that I really enjoy that. I think I like the rawness of this song.
Yeah. I think for me, on the surface, Frankenstein makes me think of, you know, monster, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that there are these pieces of the different people strapped together, and it's the band itself is this creature, you know?
I like that. I always kind of thought Johansson looked a little bit like a Frankenstein monster.
It's very kind of you, Don.
That's not very nice. So was there a cut you wanted to talk about?
This thing is trash. That's the name of the song.
Pick it up.
And that sounds like New York City as it continued to be with like the Strokes and stuff like that, oh,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how I feel so much about this album as I feel about its sounds and what those sounds influenced and turned into.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting because I heard so much of what came later when listening to this.
Yeah.
And trash, you know, I just like the vibe of it. Maybe a love song. Maybe. Don't Throw My Life Away. Maybe. I guess the band itself at some point confirmed it's about disoriented, repressed kids arriving in New York City, Manhattan. Nonconformity, rejecting societal norms. I think is it talking about them, that we're just trash on the streets of New York? Mm. Is it about ecology and, again, you know, anti-litter bug? Or just about the trash on this, you know, at this time in New York City, financially in dire straits, the streets were full of trash.
Yeah,
you know, all that was going on.
Yep.
But it captures the transition from glam rock's showmanship into punk's raw energy. And I think it influenced not just punk, but glam metal as well. Some of the sounds, but certainly the look.
Oh, yeah. Motley Crue.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. Even Poison to a softer degree.
Yeah. He keeps like switching out words. It's basically the same lyrics throughout, but he switches. So it's life, and then next time it's knife, and it's night, and then it's lights. So a lot of, you know, kind of clever, you know, lyrical changes there, which either confuse the meaning of the song or, you know, make it about more, you know.
Or it means all those things.
Yeah. But yeah, I really hear the Ramones in a lot of this.
Yeah.
I mean, despite it being a very raw record, it's, you know, 3-minute pop songs, or, you know, and they're all pretty well structured and they all have strong choruses. So it's really traditional pop songwriting, just with, you know, a little extra rawness and nonconformity. okay, well, let's go to the last song on the album. This is Jet Boy. Jet Boy's gone. Jet Boy stole my baby. Flying around New York City so high. So Jet Boy was written by Johansson and Thunders. The lyrics describe a Jet Boy character who flies around New York City so high, and apparently he stole Johansson's baby or something. Mm. It always confuses me a bit. Somebody said it's like Marvel Comics meets the Lower East Side. So it's almost like Jet Boy is a superhero or something.
Yeah, I mean, I read some stuff about maybe like flight and the blurring of gender and desire and getting into the camp drag stuff a little bit.
They throw a lot of that in there.
Yeah. There's some fans interpret it as homoerotic metaphor for lust and identity in the glam scene. I mean, it's got the punk rock attitude, and the androgyny was very defiant.
Mm-hmm.
And this takes it to the next level.
Yeah.
It takes it to the next level of what even, you know, the androgyny that Ziggy Stardust was bringing. That was more asexual, and this was a little more in your face.
Yeah.
A little more New York, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely like an art rock vibe to this as well.
Well, David went on to play another character, Buster Poindexter. I mean, I don't know what he did a lot as a solo artist, but the Buster Poindexter party feeling hot thing was another, you know, creation of his. It wasn't parts of him, but not really him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. All right. Well, this is a good time, I think, to rewind and reflect on New York Dolls. I'll start with my clickbait headline. Dolls turn trash into glam gold. Yeah, this is one, you know, I didn't discover until I was, you know, at least into my 20s. But, you know, once I listened to it, I really fell in love with it. I probably just because I recognize how much it influenced so many things that followed. But just the album itself, I think is just a, you know, an enjoyable listen. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's short. All the songs are short, you know, and it's simple, but it's clever in a lot of ways as well. It's gold.
Now, what about the costumes? Do you think it was necessary for them as a band?
Probably. I mean, I guess musically now it doesn't matter, but then it was part of a movement, right? And yeah. I mean, there's some years separating it, but it's similar, you know, to like the Warhol Velvet Underground scene, you know. I mean, this is obviously much more palatable than a lot of that stuff, but it still sort of comes out of that same place, you know. There's, you know, a shocking visual experience.
Sure. All right, well, my clickbait headline to describe the album as a whole: Mascara, Feedback, and Pure New York Attitude, all in one record. Mm-hmm. I mean, it definitely is kind of a fuck you to what I can and can't do.
Yep.
You know, sound of early 70s New York underground, loud, messy, fun, spontaneous sounding, and the roots of so much good stuff. So,
yeah, they were the Limp Bizkit of the time.
Sure.
All right. So, killer to filler ratio. There's a Bo Diddley cover on here called Pills, which I think is a lot of fun and, you know, brings in sort of the, you know, the drug element, you know, which was very much a part of the underground scene. There is one quieter song called Lonely Planet Boy, which I've always appreciated a lot. What are your favorite cuts?
I liked Looking for a Kiss.
Uh-huh.
Yes. It's a sort of doo-woppy rhythm to it, and it's kind of about hedonism and sexuality and stuff, but it's snarly and stonesy, and I like that.
Yeah. So there is sort of that like urban, like Jersey Boys kind of vibe to some of these songs.
Yes. Like Vietnamese Baby, I wasn't loving.
Yeah.
Maybe it's kind of an odd guitar sound. Wasn't really sure what was going on. Sounded like pre-Tom Morello fiddling. Yeah, really weird guitar sounds on that. Entertaining, but that one leaned more on vibe than structure. So, but maybe that's what makes it punk.
So, as I mentioned, the album is produced by Todd Rundgren.
He produced more than I thought. I always thought of him as just a performer. I didn't know how broad his production work was.
So apparently, I mean, he was really trying to get the band to move quickly. I mean, they were, I think, recorded this thing in 8 days, and he really wanted to try to capture the live energy and the immediacy of it. If you listen to their second album, there's good songs on it, but it doesn't sound as good as this one. It doesn't have the urgency to it. Mm. There's not a lot of overdubbing on it. There's some, you know, they threw in the piano. There's some maybe double tracked guitar, some, you know, backing vocals. But for the most part, it's a pretty live sounding record.
Yeah. What I like vocally is it's sneery, but it's also like, feels like parody at sometimes too. Like there's a joke being delivered. Is there, isn't there? It kind of ties in with the whole androgyny of are they men or women, all that kind of stuff. There was a lot of balance, yin and yang balance kind of throughout the album that was odd, but well produced.
Yeah. It's that confusing kind of art where there's like irony and you know, like, okay, so are we supposed to take it seriously or are we? Replay value?
Yeah. I mean, if you love attitude and character,
I do.
Over polish. I mean, it's kind of polished, but unpolished in the right ways.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's an easier record to listen to than like the Sex Pistols.
Yes. Well, because I think it's a little more tied to, there's some, I think it's because there are some elements that people at this time were used to, some of those bluesier harmonica moments. Then we get some screaming and some wild guitar, but there were moments I think that were closer to popular music, I think, as you kind of discussed earlier.
And then the legacy, well, you know, again, I think it's one of those albums where, you know, it didn't sell a lot, but seemingly like anybody who started a band had it, you know,
right.
And maybe some people are lying about whether they had it or not. But yeah, I mean, you know, this is, I think, an important record. I mean, there are other proto-punk things that paved the way for, you know, for punk rock. But I think these guys, you know, play an important role in it. But also, you know, beyond punk, you know, again, I think the glam metal of the 80s probably owes a lot to these guys.
So yeah, I never heard this album until the streaming services existed. It was one of those I'd heard about and knew David Johansen, who he was, but never got a chance to hear it until fairly recently. Their influence on punk and glam and metal is undeniable. They made costume a form of rebellion, you know, ultimately becoming their authentic selves. You know, I think if you're wearing a costume, maybe you can let it all loose and David isn't being looked at, but this character, the stage character is. So yeah, good stuff. I enjoyed it.
New York Dolls remains a defiant snapshot of rock's messy rebirth, where trash, attitude, and glitter collided to spark a revolution that never stopped burning. Check it out.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
It's time again for Deep Questions by Don. Well, you know, Halloween is about candy, isn't it?
To most kids, yes.
So when you were trick-or-treating, was there something you liked to get in your bag? And maybe things that you, you know, were disappointed to find in your bag?
For sure, whole candy bars, which I think are probably more common now. My grandpa was one of few people I knew that did it. Mm-hmm. One time we actually went to their tiny little town to trick-or-treat. I mean, he was the toast of the town because he was where there was the full candy bars. But yeah, I mean, stuff like you get those tiny little packs of sweet tarts and stuff. You know, someone drops a one banger of a root beer barrel. It's like, come on, dude, you can do better than that. How about you?
Well, I was never big on coconut as a kid. I've grown into it, but things like Mounds and Almond Joy were no good. But yeah, you know, I mean, Reese's, I think, is still probably like my number one thing.
The cups?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen the big cups they have now? They're like kind of fatter. No. Yeah, no. Those are good. Oh, you know what? Another underrated candy, I think, is the Tootsie Roll, particularly if you get like the big Tootsie Rolls that are like the size of a candy bar.
Ones?
Yeah, those are good.
Oh, yeah. I used to break those into segments and set them aside and ration them. Nice. Well, because if I still had Halloween candy after my sister had wolfed all of hers, then I could torture her it.
Wow.
Yum, yum. I still have candy.
That used to be the fun ritual was afterward you get back and you start sorting out all your candy.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Well, what's your favorite Halloween candy? Let us know. Hit us on the social media like Instagram and Facebook at Album Nerds.
I went with something a little more current, the band Ghost.
Ghost! Let's get out of here! Ghost!
The band was formed in Linköping, Sweden. Ghost emerged in 2006 as a mysterious collective, blending doom metal, pop melody, theatrical satanic imagery. The band's leader, known as Papa Emeritus, and then Papa 2, Papa 3, Papa 4, I believe there's a Cardinal Copia in there somewhere, a Papa Nil. So right now, I think there are Papa 5 Perpetua. So I should be clear, all of these Papas are the same person, just with different costuming for each album. But this album features Papa 3 and fronts the group of these masked nameless ghouls. So the band members have these masks on you. They have no names, no identities. I think within the band, they're more like hired musicians.
Yeah. He wears like a Pope hat, doesn't he? Like with the mask.
Yeah. The nameless ghouls each represent an element. You know, we've talked about that before, ether and all that stuff with some of the Mastodon albums. Beneath the costumes, Tobias Forge, the creative mastermind, writing, producing most of the material, and their anonymity and gothic stagecraft really reintroduced that showmanship and mystique into modern metal. you know, with Slipknot and stuff, there was some, like, what do they really look like? But it didn't take long before we were seeing their faces.
Yeah.
And they tried to keep the secret, but Tobias got sued by some of the band members, and court documents had their names and stuff. So by 2017 or so, we knew what he looked like. But the album we're going to be talking about is Meliora from 2015. That's Latin. I mean, I guess loosely translated to like the pursuit of something better, or just the word better. Mm-hmm. Their third album. It refines their sound, equal parts Black Sabbath heaviness, Queen-style harmonies, darkly spiritual themes. It's kind of a satire of religious devotion and sincere exploration of faith and emptiness in a modern world. Lyrical content explores the absence of God, ambition's costs, dystopian urban landscapes, as would be expected from a devilish pope. Mm-hmm. Why don't we kick it off with the opening track, Spirits. Yeah, it's cinematic. It sets the tone. It's kind of prog rocky, I guess. The actual beginning of the song, though, is so Scooby-Doo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That...
Over! I don't
know. Zoinks! When I first heard Ghost, because I was excited about it when I heard about them, and then I heard them, and it's just so la, la, la. It's not what you expect. I think you expect a demonic voice. It almost sounds like Christian rock.
Yeah.
It's got that sound to it, so I think that's what makes it even creepier.
Yes. Yeah, it really does. quiet sounds like that, or soft sounds, you know, I think is way scarier than somebody going...
Yeah, because it's like you're being preached to, kind of. It's a mix of Blue Oyster Cult, Pink Floyd, Merciful Fate. It's all kind of in there. Spirit, it's about sort of exploring being lost without a guiding presence and submitting to a new spirit. So this sort of, does God exist kind of question, you know?
Yep.
Had you listened to Ghost at all before, Don?
No. I had seen the name a lot, and I think you had mentioned them to me before, or they've come up on the show before. But no, I hadn't had a chance to listen to them. And I guess I was kind of expecting more of like a Mastodon kind of sound, and it's not that. I mean, there's some similarities,
right?
But it's not thrash, you know, not a lot of thrash going on. More... I guess a traditional kind of hard rock album, maybe
Iron Maiden-ish, maybe in parts.
I was going to say Iron Maiden, yeah.
This album is more guitar forward than previous albums that were more organ and synth stuff. And I think they went for that sound on this album in particular. And that's kind of come and gone. These album cycles appear where different Papa Emeriti are named. So with every album, there's a new lead singer, even though it's the same guy in a different costume.
It's very funny.
Yeah. All right. Well, why don't we keep moving and listen to a little bit of the big hit Grammy winner off of this album, Cerise. This is the lead single. The title is Old English for Church. Originally a part of a longer composition, Devil Church is a instrumental track later on the album. I guess they were one thing at one point. Its core themes are manipulation, seduction, religious metaphor, often seen as a critique of religious institutions or abusive relationships, offering false comfort and control. This is very guitar-y, which is part of why I like this particular track. Even that singing is more palatable to me when we get some heavier guitar. What'd you think of this one, Don?
It's an obvious standout on the album. Great riff, great guitar work. So he's harmonizing with himself, I guess, right?
I think he's pretty much the vocalist. I mean, I'm sure they get probably some synth vocals as well as probably some choirs or something here and there. But he's the primary musician. I think sometimes a hired drummer, sometimes some guitarists come in and do some things, but he's the main man.
Yeah. And then, you know, I guess there's some element of like, you know, like psychological takeover going on there. So you have like the, he's saying like, can you initially? And then moments later, it's I can. You
know, right. I can feel the thunder is lady. Yeah. It's still shocking to me. I've tried to be a fan. I've listened to every record as it's come out. I like the idea. I love the theatricality. I love what he's doing, but just I need a little more grit in my vocals in my metal for the most part. So Don, what song touched you?
Well, you wanted grit. This is the opposite of grit. Here is He Is.
He's the shining in the light with a
Yeah, so this one really, I think, ups the creepy factor, right? Because, I mean, it's like a almost like a love ballad. I think you were saying it sounds kind of like Christian rock or something.
Oh, totally. You know? I mean, that could, could easily be a Christian song about God. He's the light. He's the whatever, you know?
Yeah, and so instead, I think it's about, like, the devil, I assume.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of what it could be about. I think Tobias Forge plays around with this a lot. From what I understand, he did dabble in Satanism as a teenager as a rebellion thing against his Christian upbringing. So I believe now Tobias Forge is a Freemason, which is a secular brotherhood, but there's some spirituality in there. So I think it's about questioning what we believe in. Thinking about it, really, you know, exploring it. And, you know, maybe we come to the conclusion that we believe what we believe, but, you know, think about it.
Yeah. It at times, I think it reminded me of like the Moody Blues or something, right. You know, and they're often singing about sort of cosmic things. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this is the same kind of idea, although maybe a bit more cynical, I think.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the essence of like Satanism, I think, right? It's like pure cynicism.
Okay. Yeah, I guess it does boil it down a little.
You know, kind of like, what's the point of anything, you know, everything, right. You know, so yeah. You may as well do what you want or live life to the full or whatever.
Right. What an inspiring message. All right. Why don't we finish it out with the final track, Deus in Absentia. Just made me want to listen to The Doors.
Oh.
Come on, baby, light my fire.
Oh, yeah.
Funeral Pyre. Cinematic finale. Feels like the credits rolling, you know, at a gothic opera. Approximately 5.5 minutes. Translates from Latin to God in absence. And it embodies the central theme of the album. The absence of God, humanity's reaction to that void. What'd you think of this one, Don? I mean, it was pretty churchy sounding.
Yeah. I mean, the choir comes in, you know, for, I guess, a few minutes in. And then the choir is kind of like hypnotic and it gets more like somber as it goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's, I enjoyed this, you know, I mean, there's a, you know, a real, I'm not sure if it's an emotional feeling, but well, I saw it compared to like the Omen soundtrack.
Yeah.
The thing vibe, like the creepiness, but sort of like a spiritual creepiness, you know, old time Catholic sound.
Well, that's what all of this is kind of riffed on. And he does a really good job of taking those sounds and making them evil. Not my favorite, but well-constructed closer.
I like it.
All right. Well, we've talked about a handful of songs here. Why don't we rewind and reflect on Meliora as a whole? I'll kick it off with my clickbait headline. Papa Emeritus III wears the mitre, drops the riffs, and blesses your headbanging with inverted Christian rock. like an inverted cross.
Well done.
Dark elegance, haunting melodies, a soundscape. We haven't used that term in a while, but it definitely has prog sensibilities. Kind of a satanic cathedral. Simultaneously heavy and heavenly. And maybe Papa Scooby will at some point be the he'll do all the songs. What do you think about this one? What's your overall vibe?
Well, my clickbait headline was Deus in Absentia, but the devil is definitely home. Right. So God is absent, but the devil is here. It's I mean, overall, I think it's a fun listen. As I've said many times now, you know, I can appreciate, you know, kind of hard rock and metal. It's fun. You know, I do struggle sometimes deciding how serious I'm supposed to take it. I guess it was similar right. to like the New York Dolls.
Yeah.
But when you have group, even like Sabbath and Iron Maiden, when they're singing about satanic stuff, am I really supposed to think it's that? Or is it more just a metaphor for kind right. of rebellion? Because as you said, like in high school, you know, that's, you know, people rebel. So they, you know, do the Satan thing. But is it, you know, is it legitimate? You know, I don't know.
Well, I think the costuming is what makes it even more difficult to take seriously mm-hmm. or take it too seriously, where it's like there really is this satanic Pope figure,
right.
especially before his identity got revealed. And it's just this Swedish dude that seems like a really nice guy in interviews and stuff. Like, yeah. you know, it took some of the mystique away from this whole emeritus thing. And people didn't know it was the same guy either at yeah. first. Like when Papa 2 came out, people were like, oh my God, what happened to, you know, it's like, yeah. So Killer to Filler, it's pretty short album and they're all pretty strong as far as, you know, what the album is meant to do. From the Pinnacle to the Pit is one of those guitar driven riff heavy tracks. Good and one. I like that whole, you know, kind of heaven to hell, I guess. If you think of the Pinnacle as heaven, mm-hmm. Mummy Dust, very theatrical, yep. monstery. You know, is it really about mummies? There's a part where they say, "In God We Trust." So, is it about money and greed? Like, you know, it's fun. Any killers for you?
Yeah, I think those would be, you know, other than the ones we spoke about before. I think Mummy Dust and From Pinnacle to the Pit are the strongest. And I mean, yeah, I wouldn't identify any fillers. I mean, there are like those two instrumental tracks,
yeah,
you know, which are meant to be kind of like interludes. I like
that's
that.
That's what I read. Yeah. 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 I read the tracks would get a little heavier and then they would use that as sort of a cooling down and yeah. reset.
I like
thought
that
worked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So overall, yeah, good songs. I mean, mm-hmm. in this world of Ghost, production wise, Tobias, although I think he was partnered with Klaus Åhlund here, but Tobias is really the driving force behind, I think, the main decisions. Mm-hmm. Very cohesive, cinematic album, layered guitars, cathedral organs, choirs, polished perfection, and atmospheric, mm-hmm. you know? And I think the production supports what they're doing.
Yeah, apparently this Åhlund feller was from the world of pop music. So he had done artists like Katy Perry and Robin. So it was kind of an interesting, you know, idea of having a producer like that work on metal.
Yeah.
But I think it worked. I mean, the songs are strong and I think the production, you know, complements them well. You know, the choruses are kind of big and I think, you know, whatever polish, I guess is the word mm-hmm. or the cleanliness of it, works. So yeah, you know, I think it's well produced. The mummy dust. Yeah. You know, I mean, I guess it got pretty elaborate in there. I mean, they had like each guitar hooked up to four amplifiers and stuff. Jeez. And so they may have gone a little overboard. Crazy. So apparently in the next album, they went a little more bare bones.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of what seems to happen. They change Papas. They they redirect the sound a little bit. And then in between, there's like EPs in between. So there's like an album and an EP in each mm-hmm. cycle. So a Papa gets a couple of releases before the next one is named. Replayability. For me, it's high. I mean, I guess around Halloween time mm-hmm. or when you want something immersive and dramatic and cinematic or to be creeped out a little bit. I mean, because I grew up so steeped in Christianity and it's so sewn into my DNA. Sewn into my DNA. That's a weird statement. But it's so much a part of me. You know, I'm not like a churchgoer guy, but it makes me very uncomfortable when I really start, when I hear He Is and I'm like, is that about the devil? Because if it's about the devil, I'm going to have to throw my headphones off of my head. You know, yeah. Like it freaks me out a little bit. I think that's the point.
Yeah, I know what you're
How
saying.
How about you?
Yeah, it's creepy. you know, in a different way than other things we listen to, like Oingo Boingo or something.
Right.
I don't know if this...
That's fun. This is not fun. Yeah. I mean, I guess it depends on your... I'm sure there are fans that think this is fun as hell, but...
Yeah. But it, I mean, it's I think it's a well produced album. I think the songs are strong. So I'll revisit this. I think it's good.
You should check out some of the other stuff. There's some weird, like they did one EP that was supposed to be recorded in 1969 by the original Papa, which was like Papa Zero or Papa Nil or something like that. So it has a 60s sort of psychedelic sound. Wow. The guy's having fun with the whole. The universe he's created.
Yeah, that's cool.
what about the legacy of this thing? I mean, to me, it really revitalized heavy metal for a new generation where they had this dangerous thing. That's what made metal when I was a kid was parents hated it. It was dangerous. It was creepy. It was scary. And this brought that back.
Yeah.
That to me is their legacy.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds right to me. You know, like I'm not that well-versed in the modern metal world, but it does seem like you have an artist like this and maybe Mastodon that are really, you know, continue to, you know, move things into this century.
If your kid wants to go see Mastodon, I mean, it's not, you know, fine. They're guys with guitars. Or if he wants to go see Ghost, it's Nameless Ghouls and Satanic Popes. It's like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, are you going to be sacrificed at this thing?
I think I prefer this to like Insane Clown Posse or something.
Well, sure. Sure. Oh, yeah. They could have been on our list.
Missed opportunity.
Maybe next time. So Meliora is Ghost at their most polished. Every note, mask, and myth perfectly in place. The sound and spectacle are undeniable, even if the lyrics don't quite matter. Check it out.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
All right. Well, we had two tasty treats in our bag of candy. Anything else good in your bag of Halloween candy this week?
I'm one of the rich kids in the neighborhood. I got a plastic pumpkin punk. Yeah, there's I stuck kind of in the Halloween world since I was so immersed in it over the course of the week. I went with Unto Others, a band we've talked about before.
Untoothers.
Portland-based gothic post-punk band, blending horror themes with metal and punk influences. Compared sometimes to The Cure and Typo Negative. So if you took those two things and put them together, or Misfits, Ramones vibes. This one's called I Believe in Halloween 2. It's a EP, 5-track EP, continuing their spooky sci-fi tinged aesthetic. Highlights include the eerie They Came From Space, the narrative-driven What I Did, and some covers, one by the Misfits and one by the Ramones. This one is the Misfits cover. It's called Halloween. I really like these guys. Like, I just, everything they put out, I enjoy. It's mm-hmm. fun. It's kind of like Oingo Boingo, but more metal.
Yeah.
So I also like to bring an album to the table that I have acquired on vinyl or CD or whatever. This one is a Black Sabbath album, the self-titled album from 1970 by the pioneering English heavy metal band from Birmingham, featuring Ozzy Osbourne, of course, on vocals. Rest in peace, Ozzy. Tony Iommi on guitar, Geezer Butler on bass, Bill Ward on drums. Got to mention their names. Self-titled debut is widely regarded as the first true heavy metal album. And it opens with this ominous riff-laden title track, Black Sabbath. Get higher and higher. Oh, no, no, please, God, help me. Why am I... I'm totally okay with the satanic overtones. It doesn't creep me out at all. Maybe because I've, you know... Ozzy's been a part of my life for as long as I can remember.
Yeah.
Although this initially met with mixed reviews, it has since retroactively been hailed as a landmark record in rock history. Yeah. The one I have is a 180 gram LP, gatefold cover, inner sleeve, 2016, I believe was the pressing on this one, but it uses the 2012 remaster, so it's not the original master recordings on this one.
I remember hearing that Black Sabbath riff was like the devil's note combination or something. Yeah. Like in classical music, they avoided it because it, you know, triggers something, Satan or something.
Yeah, that album is so good, and that song in particular is really all you need. Starts with the thundery rain and creepy cemetery vibes and stuff. So, good stuff. A couple Halloween treats to check out if you either haven't listened or just need to get back to them. What about you, Don? What you digging on?
Well, this one, not really tied to Halloween, although it's it's very sweet, almost sickeningly sweet, right? So, the Blow Monkeys. All right, I have a new album called Birdsong. Blow Monkeys were a kind of in the new wave realm in the 80s, but more in that kind of sophistopop world that we've talked about in the past, kind of more R&B informed than like post-punk. But here's a song called Walk On, Nothing Is Lost. Nothing is lost. Yeah, a lot of the sounds kind of remind me of like 70s soul and disco.
For some reason, that's reminding me of like an old style Casio keyboard samba setting.
Sure. Yeah, it could be. So that's the Blow Monkeys. And just wanted to mention a record because it is Halloween time. One of my favorite records to listen to at this time of the year is the Sisters of Mercy, Floodland, which was released in 1987. We actually discussed this record a year or two ago. Mm-hmm. Sisters of Mercy is basically just this fellow, Andrew Eldritch. There were other members of the band, but he's kind of the main creative force. Yeah, very, goth rock. Here's a song called Lucretia, My Reflection.
No offense to the Blow Monkeys, but I'll take that.
No, yeah.
maybe it's just the Halloween-y feel
that
I'm having.
Yeah, I was actually just watching some British anthology horror show, and there was a episode that had like these gothic characters, and they ended up playing that song on there, so reminded me of it. Great Halloween album. So what are you digging this Halloween? Let us know. Join us on the socials like Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky at Album Nerds.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
Well, here we are once again. Ooh. It's a time on the show when I'm reminded of the words of David Bowie.
Diamond Dogs.
And he said, I reinvented my image so many times that I'm in denial that I was originally an overweight Korean woman. It's quite a costume. With that in mind, let's bring out the Wheel of Musical Discovery to find out what kind of albums we'll be discovering next episode.
Next time, we're spinning back to classic Casey countdowns. You'll be taking the biggest hits from this week in 1973 and diving into the albums they came from, exploring the sounds, stories, and artists that defined the era.
So seeing as how we are reaching the end portion of 2025 and people start thinking about top lists of best movies, best books, best albums, we thought maybe we'd spend some time with Casey Kasem from over the decades and focusing on the wheel telling us what year we're going to do. And then we will pick albums from artists featured on American Top 40, and Casey's Top 40.
That'll be fun.
And then we'll match up the weeks to the same week that we're making the episode for to try and keep it tied to today. That should be fun. 1973.
Good year. All right. What are your favorite Halloween records? What do you remember from November 1973? What else are you listening to? Email us at podcast@albumnerds.com or follow us on Instagram and other social media at Album Nerds. And visit albumnerds.com to listen to all 311 episodes. And the best way to support the show is to share it. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
Thank you, as always, for listening to the Album Nerds podcast. We'll catch you next time where you can think about what you don't remember from 1973.
It was a graveyard smash.
This again?
Did I do that last year?
You're sick. We'll roll with it. Okay.
That was my Vincent Price.
Yeah, that was great.
Thank you.
That was awesome.
Trick or treat, assholes.
Happy Halloween, y'all. See you next time.